Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we are talking about Season 8, Episode 6, titled The King, the Widow, and Rick. If I'm Rick, I'm a little disturbed that I don't get a cool title.
Yeah.
Everybody else gets, like, an awesome name. I just get Rick.
Also, you get that you don't get top billing?
Yeah.
If I was Andrew Lincoln, I would
talk
be
to my agent.
I would be talking to people. I'd been talking to him a couple seasons ago.
Maybe so.
Like, I signed a 10-season contract? What? What?
Yeah, that must be the case. It's got to be. So what'd you think of this episode?
I mean, this is such a garbage show. It's such
a garbage show. What are you talking about?
But I did find there was some hilarious...
Oh, you mean there are garbage people in the show.
There's garbage people in this garbage show. They've colonized it and turned it into their own. But there is some just hilarious, it's funny because I don't think it's unintentional hilarity. Like just like if you can watch this show and think they give a fuck about suspension of disbelief on a show where a woman uses a rocket launcher on a dude from 30 feet away.
Yeah,
I don't know what to tell you. It's just it defies commentary. Like the stuff with Jadis and the garbage people was hilarious. But stupid. There was, and here's the Walking Dead. It had one genuine scene from a better show, and that's between Carol and Ezekiel, where I'm like, yes, that's it. And
it's the hallmark of the show is we're gonna give you one scene to keep you thinking maybe there will be something.
No,
good
and
about
like
this.
And like the forming like a stockade prison inside the hilltop and the added to like that. That's the kind of like real a post apocalyptic politics that I think I enjoy about the show.
Yeah.
But just not enough of it.
No,
there's not enough of it.
Absolutely.
Like you could scrap together 1.5 compelling episodes out of all of the original interesting ideas that they've had this season. It's terrible. It's terrible and getting worse.
It absolutely is. The best stuff, in my opinion, was Maggie this episode. I thought she had like a lot of really good, like thoughtful approaches to things.
Yeah.
In the face of just sheer lunacy from all sides.
Mm-hmm.
So good for you, Maggie. But everything else about it's another mess of an episode
right.
in a string of six now that. I'm ready to pronounce this the worst half season of The Walking Dead ever.
Yeah, there hasn't
it's
been
absolute.
There hasn't been a single like we're looking for single scenes to salvage, and
right.
we're not like there's always been one or two episodes. Where, like, hey, this is actually pretty good and entertaining.
Yeah.
We haven't six episodes in, we haven't even seen that. So,
and it might just be because you're getting theme fatigue. Honestly, like they've gone to the wells that they're going to so many times now that even when they would like 4 seasons ago when that idea that concept would have been interesting and new
right.
it's now just so overdone
I'm just saying,
and passé
I've started this show because Rick shot someone in a tank and deafened himself
right
and that was really cool that there's a real world consequence and then I remember in season 3 decrying the fact that Rick shoot someone in a concrete box, and why don't we get the like extreme flanging and wah-wah-wah, and like that's maybe his hearing's just gone.
Yeah.
And in this episode, someone blows another person up from 30 feet away with an RPG, and like, but you want me to believe in a universe that has flashbangs because they use flashbangs to good effect in like I think the first assault to the satellite. Like, come the fuck on! Like Rosita would be dead.
Yeah.
And
there
Michonne,
was no concussive force to that explosion, which
it was just
it was like a fucking
guy eraser. It was like from a video game. It's it's like the grenade launcher from Half-Life. Thunk, the guy just disappears, and you're except for I think
but
you
there
take
was splash damage.
Damage
and,
you would take splash damage that close in Half-Life. It's ludicrous, but it's funny.
It was definitely funny, but
like
for the right reasons.
Maybe it's they are letting heard the crit. They are letting little Z, but I don't think it's true. I think they just don't give a shit. Like, oh, we know what's cool, Rosita with a rocket launcher.
Maybe that's the effects people having some fun.
It's bad
like,
effects
the,
too.
The explosion looked really bad.
It looked like they used that app on the iPhone where you can like fake a missile strike.
Yeah,
like it's that kind of compositing.
Like the
and
guy combusted into a series of sparklers going off.
You know, again, if that happened in real life, Rosita would be dead. The one dude would be super dead, and Michonne and evil Michonne would be knocked out from the concussive force.
Right.
And if they wake up with ears bleeding.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, they do this stuff. This is not the first time we've seen an RPG go off, and this is not anywhere near the explosive force of the first RPG that went off.
Right.
There's no consistency either.
Right.
So sometimes you need an RPG to blow up, I don't know, 12 dudes standing in a massive circle.
Right.
And it works. Sometimes you need an RPG to blow up one guy.
What they need is Star Trek phasers because, like, you know, yeah, those dustbusters that Picard could carry could cave in a cave. They could stun someone. They could vaporize an alien because they're adjustable power.
Makes sense.
Real-life weapons don't do that. So you either have to change your plot or you do this. And The Walking Dead is doing this way too fucking much. Mm. It's stupid.
They should have had her look at like a really, really big RPG round and then have her like go pick up the smaller one next to it.
Yeah, one size of an acorn. Mm, and then like
scratch
her
chin. Maybe.
This is the Goldilocks RPG.
Okay. I think we're ready for the recap, yeah?
Yeah. Hey, before we get into the episode, want to talk about some stuff going on here at Bald Move. Now, if you have not been with us for a long time, you might not know this, but the entire month of December, when there's not much going on TV-wise, Jim and I did this big Christmas extravaganza. Last year, we had the Badass Bald Move Christmas, where we did live watches of Christmas-themed action movies, such as Die Hard, Rocky IV, which is famously the Rocky versus
Drogon, right?
No, I guess I said the fucking Game of Thrones has fucked me up. I'm not even sure.
It's Drago. Ivan Drago.
Took place on Christmas. And then we also did
Jingle All the Way,
with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then we went heartwarming on Christmas Day with It's a Wonderful Life. If you join the club, you can get all of last year's celebrations. We also get rip-roaring drunk when we do it.
And the year before, I think we were like singing songs.
We did
and
the 24 days of Bald Move Christmas, where we decorated a tree with mini booze bottles, and every day we sang a new TV-themed verse and and got drunk and hammered at lunches. And
It's happening again.
If that sounds like a good idea, club members get excited because we're coming back, and we're going to kick it off with this week's Friday lunch. We're going to announce the slate of movies we're going to be doing and the format, so that's going to be real fun. And then January rolls around. January is still pretty quiet. That's when that's Baldy season.
Yeah,
that's when all the big executives start sending in for your consideration bags of money to us, and just like it's a morally bankrupt, ethically questionable process where Jim and I, from the list of movies and TV that we've seen, tried to derive the season's best.
Yeah.
And it's going to be The Leftovers.
I think there are like six or 7,000 hours of Bald Move content coming out in December and January.
Yeah, it's just all going to be for club members.
Yeah.
Except for, I guess, the Baldies is for everybody.
The ceremony is, yeah.
Yeah, and we also got Mr. Robot. And next week, we got The Disaster Artist. And a week after that, Star Wars. Holy shit.
Yep.
Yeah, but this week, this is Mr. Robot. We're actually preparing the Christmas feast that you will be eating in December behind the scenes. So that's housekeeping. Come back Friday. Check out Mr. Robot. Mr. Robot, oh, by the way, super good this year.
Yeah, way better.
Mr. Robot is firing on all cybernetic cylinders. It's a really good show. Come back Friday. So we start off with something that's confusing because I feel like they were trying to flashback to show how Rick was shuffling correspondence with Dwight, but they've had this
holy shit, I didn't understand this scene.
They've got this, I think what's happening is they're suggesting there's a post-apocalyptic Kevin Costner postman situation where they've got these small caches of microwaves and they trade letters back and forth, even though it's a trivial exercise. Like, they're treating this like it's fucking letters from
Iwo Jima.
Yes, I actually have that in a note, but like it's fucking President Lincoln talking to Ulysses Grant on the battlefield, and there's some kind of fucking Pony Express guy desperately slapping a horse ass to try to get it to him in time. It's so fucking stupid. They've got walkie-talkies and shit.
They do, yeah.
So they want, but they're like, you know what's cool? Like, we just watched the Ken Burns Vietnam documentary and, like, all these letters home questioning whether it's super, like, of course, that wouldn't work out because of filming. But they clearly have seen letters from Iwo Jima and some of this other stuff, and they're aping that style. But it makes, with no concession to whether it makes sense in this world or not.
Yeah, and I don't quite understand the logistics of this whole operation either, because clearly, Rick's, like, on the road to phase two of this plan after having his scuffle with Daryl, right?
Yes.
How did he fire off a note to these people? Read in his own voice.
Yeah. And then, because
he picks up the dead drop, he doesn't leave.
And then
anything.
Maggie gets a message, and she messages Carol, and it's like I said, it's
none of this made any sense to me. I honestly thought it could have been like a flash forward to the future,
right.
20 years from now, where old man Rick is reading
that's
his previous letters about like his journals about
when,
the thing.
When I
to,
first saw this, I'm like, oh, because I got excited because I'm like, oh, I had this idea that maybe Rick is trying to be a war correspondent. He's making this tome of knowledge to
right.
like this is why things happen. And I initially I'm like, oh, they got this oral history thing going. And then they just completely threw it away with some weird world build. It's like opposite. It's like world destroying.
Right.
It's like the opposite of world building. It doesn't reveal anything new. It reveals something confusing and hard to understand about the actual world they live in. It's
yeah.
I don't know. And then like Rick is saying, it was scarier than I thought it would be. Fuck are you talking about? You were rolled up on in a prison with a fucking tank.
Mm-hmm.
How is this scarier than you thought it would be? Like, more dumb fucks died than, like, that's a new thing. Like, that we've got these,
yeah.
like, civilians and non-combatants versus combatants. Like, more of the professional soldier class died than maybe you thought. But, like, why? This is not an unbloodied person. This is
yeah.
not his first go-around or even sixth.
Rick's memory is very short at this point. He's taking a lot of blows to the head.
Remember the time when you're locked up in a cattle car by a bunch of hungry cannibals?
Mm-hmm.
This was scarier than that. This,
you remember when they wrote A on your train?
It was
scary
because Daryl hit you? Like, is that mm-hmm. what made it scarier? Because that's the only thing that seems to be different. Like, this,
yeah.
without you knowing what happened at the kingdom, this was probably a stunning success. Like, everything's kind of gone according to plan. Again, handicapped because we don't know what the plan is.
Right.
We're moving on phase two of a plan that we are only understanding in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and this is against the whole backdrop of the kingdom in mourning and the hilltop looking pensive and Jerry wearing his ceremonial robes guarding the king, even though he's not supposed to anymore. Whatever. He says the rest of the plan is a go, and he's collecting these Polaroids that we now know are evidence of Rick's superiority, and he says they're going to meet in 2 days at the sanctuary to end it, and then we cut to the Romulan sub-commander Jadis doing metalwork, wearing nothing but a rubber apron, and my notes say, ugh.
She's not the only one.
Oh?
No, there's garbage ass dude who walks by.
Garbage ass?
Yeah, you didn't see garbage ass?
No, I didn't see garbage ass.
Oh, Jesus, man.
It
was all I could
the
see.
The naked Jadis with the rubber apron. Not
there was
like,
another one of her doppelgangers running around.
Interesting.
Walked right in front of the screen.
Why do you call him garbage ass?
Because he's a trash person with his ass hanging out.
They're doing nude garbage crafts?
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't her alone. This was not her idea.
Interesting. This is like their Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is how they worship. They get naked and they wear assless chaps and rubber gowns.
I mean, they're just weird for weird's sake, right?
They are, Jim. They're weird for weird's sake.
It's not, I don't know. I don't find, I guess, weird for weird's sake entertaining.
No.
I wish there was a reason behind why these people were doing the things they do.
Like, if they dressed weird or talked weird or had...
Yeah.
It's just everything is this incomprehensible. Like, why did they... It would be interesting if there was a compelling reason why they did any of this stuff.
Right.
But there's
it
not.
It might be interesting.
They're just Planet of the Week on Star Trek The Next Generation.
But they're like six Planet of the Weeks in a row all mixed together into one group of
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
To the point where it's not even a moral parable at this
right.
point
they
or any kind
the,
of lesson.
They added the hedonistic planet where they're all naked to this one.
Yeah.
Rick blundered into their garden, mm-hmm. and now he's going to be forced to fight a Mad Max zombie naked.
Wesley found their weed stash.
Because Jadis and Bryon... Did you need to see? I watched subtitles.
Bryon.
The Supreme Romulan Commander's name is Bryon. Bryon.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even have a norm like this. Like this was not. He's probably just Brian, and they spelled it weird when he got his trash name bestowed upon him.
Yeah, for sure.
After he defeated a Mad Max zombie naked. Jesus is giving apples outside the walls of the king, or to the hilltop rather, to the savior hostages, and Maggie doesn't like it one bit. She walks out and exclaims, "Jesus!" Gregory's some about what bullshit this is. Jesus says, hey, what are we fighting for? When we end this, what do we have that's worth what what do we have left is worth what we lost, which is a fair point. But what's more, like, I like this thing with Jesus, the overall plot point. My point is, Jesus can't have any fucking nuance. Like,
yeah, that's what I appreciate about Maggie. Like, yeah. she understands what Jesus is saying, but she has, you know, a little bit of common sense to her.
But this is all undermined by Jesus being a lunatic during the assault. Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't understand why he can't have a little bit of like, oh, okay, well, there's this guy and there's actually gunfire and our people are dying and yeah. he's already betrayed me once. This guy's got to die. Then later, I mean, we talked about it in this fucking episode. And
it's because he has to have the same exact arc that Morgan did 2 seasons ago. Like, yeah. what the fuck are we doing with these characters?
I would respect Jesus a million times more if he hadn't tried to take the guy actively trying to kill them in right. a combat zone hostage. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. Or not hostage, I guess. He just wanted to take him prisoner. Maggie is now using him as hostages. We'll see how that goes.
So they're turnips, for the record.
Oh, they're turnips?
Yeah.
These are okay.
They're no one's going to eat that many turnips, mostly rotted Maggie. Turnips.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that true?
It is.
Because they look like apples to me.
He says turnips.
Is that just his code name for bad
Maybe.
Apples?
Maybe he doesn't know the difference.
He's Jesus. He's got, you know, like, what do you want him to be, expert in horticulture as well as kung fu?
That's fair.
Religious studies? Come on.
I can tell the difference between apple and not apple. That's about the extent that I've got. So it might be a turnip, it might be a potato. It's either apple or not.
Maybe it's
apple
a fruit that Eve ate of the garden. You know, the mysterious fruit.
The turnip?
Yeah, it was actually a turnip tree. So Jerry tries to stop Carol as she goes to visit the king. She's not having it. She says, we got to gather everyone available who can fight. Henry is in the background practicing with a broomstick, and he's like, hey! And then Jerry reveals that he was dismissed from the king's service, but he can't. The king's just such a cool dude. Do you want to talk about the garbage people?
I mean, I want to talk about Rick presenting a false dichotomy here.
Okay, because like I think it's like, again, the weird for weird's sake. So the doors swing open, there's Rick. Jadis is doing nude garbage sculpturing.
Mm-hmm.
We then smash cut from the point of view of Rick to them forming this elaborate 2-circle deep pattern, and they're doing this Oompa Loompa ceremony, and she's now fully dressed in her Jada regalia, and Rick is brought, like, did she honestly, like, she's like, whoa, time out, okay, Rick, you go back outside the gates, we're all gonna get properly dressed, and in this like, give us an hour and then we'll receive you,
dude. If you're getting this worked up about a change of clothes.
I'm warming
holy
up.
Holy shit.
I'm actually telling a story of my rage
okay.
in
yes.
a carefully controlled way that is unheard of in The Walking Dead's writer room. Anyway, she says, I shot you. Why the hell are you here? These are all fair points. Rick says, no, you didn't shoot me. You grazed me.
Yeah.
And
twice he says that.
And you need us, and we need you, and the saves are finished. Here's the Polaroids to finish it. She says, fake news. He says, forget Negan, switch sides again. He actually says, I want you to switch sides again and be part of our new world, or we'll destroy you.
Yeah.
And then Brian, the ultimate Romulan commander, comes in and says, threats and dreams.
Dreams and threats.
Like, this is fucking bad.
And then Jadis gives Rick his new trash name, Negan. And
yes.
on all is right in the world.
Right, Negan has now become Negan.
Uh-huh. What the fuck? He's presenting...
He bothers, but not...
A choice that is not a choice, right? I mean, how is Rick any different than Negan in this situation? Because Negan has presented them the exact same option.
Rick is building a democratic society where everyone has a say, and there's not this,
which
like,
destroys anyone who decides not to join it.
Sure. I mean, this is...
There is no option to live in peace in your own society that just doesn't join up with the others. That's
right.
not an option.
I mean, they're like,
come
that's
on,
like...
Rick.
But I mean, yes, it
that's
is an
not,
option.
That's
Rick's
not democracy. That's a dictatorship. That's might right by might.
I don't know. Like, this is the old philosophical saw of what role does intolerance play in a tolerant society? Do you tolerate intolerance? Because if you tolerate intolerance, the intolerant will just come and take over and kill all the tolerant people.
I think you tolerate someone wanting to do their own thing if it's not harming anyone else.
But these people took up arms against them with Negan. So they've already,
right, but
like,
he doesn't present the option of stop supporting Negan. Stop supporting Negan, and we will let you live on your own in your junk world.
I mean, I agree with your broader point, which is I don't understand why Rick is bothering with this, because these people are fucking crazy. Like, why does he think that the way they view necessities and rights and needs and obligations and are anything like him? Did you not see what you walked in on? Nude trash art day? Like, what the fuck?
I don't know. I can't even tell you why he's there in the first place.
Because that was part of the plan. The part of the plan was to overwhelmingly...
Yeah. Well, that's the problem, is I can't tell you why he's there.
Right.
Other than it's part of the plan.
I mean, you're right.
For what greater purpose, I have no idea.
I can speculate that the purpose was to win an overwhelming assault against the Saviors, have photographic evidence, and then use that to compel Jadis to listen to. It's not going to work, and she's going to have to do some kind of Mad Max zombie fight. Because that's the way their culture works.
Right, and you can't... I can't even speculate on why Rick thought this was going to work. Why this is a good idea. I mean, if they're
teamed
up with
Negan... Why not just take care
of
the Saviors and fuck these... And then kick these people's cave in?
He's offering himself up on a silver fucking platter to Negan. Because he's going in there alone. They could just take him hostage and give him to Negan, which is what Negan wants.
Although, I guess one of the points of Rick is... Because the thing is, like, I don't want to fall in the trap of unfairly criticizing this fucking show. Like, I think one of Rick's through lines is he's kind of done being in charge. So if like the figurehead status has been passed on to Maggie and Jesus and to even Carl, because like with Michonne's earlier statements and Carl trying to take more of a lead, Rick is like, he's done in the leadership game. So if he gets himself captured, that won't be as big a blow as like getting Negan captured. I think that's what the show wants us to believe.
Oh, I agree with that. I don't know why they named it the King, the Widow, and Rick then. Maybe name it all the others aside from Rick.
That's true. Because maybe that's from a Negan point of view. Like, Negan is very personally aligned against Rick, but if you ask like the Hilltop what they're fighting for, Rick wouldn't be in the top three.
But in an episode where, I don't know. I mean, maybe they're going back to what Negan called them. Like, that's their only concern. But I would think you would want to name something thematically, as opposed to, like, saying, hey, here's the continuation of the story. Remember when Negan said the King, the Widow, and Rick last episode?
But isn't that what it is? This is all about Rick, Maggie, and the King's response to the latest shit that's been happening this season.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why it's called the King, the Rick, and Widow. Or what? The King, Widow, and Rick?
Yeah.
The Widow, the King, the Rick?
It is.
The Rick. Anyway, trash people, do you want to talk more about them?
No.
Well, you're going to have to later on in this outline. Just steal yourself. Just start drinking. Start drinking.
It's water.
So Gregory's making apologies for his actions, and he says, your job's not easy. He's like, I don't know, Gregory. It looked pretty easy to sell out the Hilltop. And he says, my choice is superior because it didn't involve bullets. You connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a very great...
Anytime someone tells you connect the dots, it means they haven't fully thought it through, and they'd like you to help them out.
Right, like, because I'm not an absolute pacifist. I do believe there's a time and place for state-sanctioned violence against people.
Like, and if not now, when?
Right, and the fact that you're saying this shit in, like, the zombie apocalypse, I don't know. It's whatever. And he says, look, my motives are pure. I can still help. I'm not a hippy-dippy fighting friend like Jesus. And he does this weird, and he knocks over. It's just buffoonery. It's buffoonery.
Yeah.
And he says, you're the shepherd. We can't have sheep wandering around at the wolves. All right. I mean, he put his own neck in a noose there, right?
He did. Yeah, unknowingly. Sure.
I mean, I believe that Gregory is that fucking stupid that he would do something like that. Like, he would just like, oh, I mean, he's...
No, I think it's fitting for his character. He doesn't think through the consequences of his actions or his words, and then... All of a sudden, whoops, he's in the pen with the rest of them.
I mean, I remember Gregory being terrible in the comics, but I don't remember him being incompetent. Hmm. I remember being Weasley and, like, two-faced and, like, eventually, you know, he's found out and he's brought to justice, similar to this episode. But I don't remember him being, like laughable with contempt. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's just, like, terrible in the comics, too. Michonne and Rosita have a probably bad idea to go have a look at the sanctuary.
Why?
I mean, because, Rick is... I mean, because the thing is, like, everything we've heard so far is, other than sustaining larger losses than we'd like in the kingdom, this has been a smash success. Why are the alarms blaring in Michonne's head?
Dude, I think it's just because she's not involved and she has trust issues.
That's actually fine. That's the answer I was going to give too.
But come on. It has been like 45 minutes since this plan was started. Please give it a chance to work, Michonne.
Right.
Before you go off script, abandoning
especially
the Alexandrians in a time of need.
No one is there in Alexandria as far as I can tell. No. Aaron, no Jesus, no Rick,
Michonne.
No Michonne, no Carl even.
Yep.
Fucking Judith went off to go see, have a look at the sanctuary as far as I last heard.
Who's protecting it? Carhartt.
Wounded Carhartt, man.
Reg, protecting it from beyond the grave, I guess.
Reg is cold rolled steel is all the protection his community needs.
Shit.
And coincidentally, Tara is looking for Daryl. They want to kill Dwight together.
Dude. They need... Tara. Tara was on board with this fucking plan to begin with. She helped lead the walkers to the sanctuary.
Yes.
Give it some fucking time
but she
to
wants
work.
To, she wants to, but she wants her and, that's the thing I understand. Like, they want to
but
kill
why didn't, why
Dwight.
Didn't she make this objection at the very beginning of the plan?
Did
why
they
did
have
she
to kill
half,
Dwight at the end of it?
Half follow the plan. No. Like, say, look, I want to help you with this plan, but I want to kill Dwight to the people in charge or something.
I think that, like, instinctively, her and Daryl both know that this would not be, like there's an actual insurrection. Like, that these people who are not publicly elected, who are not appointed as leaders, are doing this, like, behind-the-scenes extrajudicial killings. And which makes them, I don't know if the show realizes this, but it makes them villains.
Absolutely.
Once, that's the thing. Like, if Palestine and Israel ever form a peace, part of that peace will be people soaked with blood on the other side. And if you can't do that, then you cannot live in an ultimately peace and secure society. If you can't be the guy, if you're going to be the guy like, okay, everybody except for Dwight, if everybody says, okay, everybody except for the person that actually hurt me, nobody, like, there's going to be nothing formed. And I think Daryl's a terrorist now is what I'm getting at.
I don't know. That word has lost all meaning at this point.
Okay, but which part of my thesis do you disagree with? Because, like, again, I don't know that
I disagree with any of it. Maybe I wouldn't use that label for him, but that's just me.
Okay. He is a vigilante.
Sure, absolutely.
Everyone in the show is
at this point. Because it's not just Michonne and Rosita and Daryl and Tara. It's also fucking Aaron and Enid at the end.
Okay, you're right. Everybody's gone off the res. And which is so weird because Rick is doing the most.
Absolutely. It has worked. The plan is working.
Yeah.
To a fucking letter.
Yeah.
And all these people have just decided after 45 minutes of battle, we're done with this. We're going to take matters into our own hands. They were supposed to. This is supposed to be the part of the arc where we see this team united as a badass fighting machine.
Right.
They have completely fucked that up.
Yeah, and I hate to tell you, but this is another Kirkman remix.
Yeah, no,
like
they're
taking shit from like different parts and like throwing it in now, and it doesn't fit because it's not paced properly, and Kirkman washed his hands out of it, so I can't even cut. It's a Gimple remix now. Oh, boy. So I guess that's the other thing is, like, why do you got to kill? They have to kill Dwight now because I think they know that if they win, they're not going to be allowed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this might end up with Jesus or with all these people, like, in the stockade. That would be kind of bizarre. Like, you're criminals.
Could.
We can't trust you. Like, you're fucking Carol. Like three seasons after we decided to collectively that Carol is not the way to go. She lost her mind. She lived in the cabin for you. I don't know if you guys watched that episode, but like we decided that kind of shit does not fly here.
I don't know how they're going to get Daryl in that pin. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah.
It can't
like
be Rick.
Because
Rick's
mode.
Just going to put him in a headlock.
Right. So the Hilltop's doing a building project and Jesus has a discussion with the Savior. So let me ask you if I understand this correctly. This is a savior who doesn't want to die, who kind of sees the like shitty side.
Yeah.
Why? And he's talking to the person who is their champion.
And he's making a case as if like I'm basically innocent, you know.
But nobody is.
I'm just a nobody here. Like I got forced into this. Like whatever.
So that's good, but then at the end he's like, but I'm not innocent. I'm not, you're Jesus. I'm no angel. Like, what are, so like, are you playing devil's advocate for your own self?
I think he's saying angels don't exist, like, none of us, not even you, Jesus,
but
are
again, but again, the target of this is the person who's championed your rights. Like, why is this an odd tone to take with someone who's already doing his most to try to save you guys?
Here's what they're clumsily doing.
Okay.
They're setting up the idea that Jesus is going to defy Maggie and let them all go. 100% guarantee it. How long?
Let
how
them
many,
all go in what kind of circumstance?
Let them out the gates. Out the gates, like, and
Maggie,
just let the saviors
Maggie
go, because Maggie's going to try and kill them.
Hmm.
And he doesn't want to see that happen.
Boy.
Am I wrong?
I mean, I didn't think they were going that way, but that makes sense now.
But it totally
but
doesn't,
but
that's what they're going
to
do.
Right.
I know that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they have to do this nonsense scene to set up the other nonsense scene that they want to do.
They have to guilt Jesus into it. Like, guilt him
even more than he
already feels.
Right.
They have to do that so that he can be justified, quote unquote justified, in letting them go.
Yeah.
So the audience will forgive him for that.
I mean, because like I said, like, I don't know. Like, some of these guys, like, you know, this Savior's accent, by the way, waffles eternally between, like, Adam Goldberg, Private Mellish from Saving Private Ryan, and Christopher Walken.
Uh-huh.
You know, Christopher Goldberg here seems like an all right guy. I feel like that the way to go, the sane thing to do, was to come up with some kind of parole option. Hmm. Where you get these guys, like, one at a time, you get them out, you sign them three different people to do of actual Hilltop people to form a work gang, see how they are, and like have a system where, you know, people can report and say what kind of good conduct, like what kind of, you know, like again, come up with a functional legal system.
Yeah.
Like Maggie's way of just like, okay, these guys are hostages, and if we don't need them anymore, we're going to kill them. That's kind of insane, too, because, like, I don't understand why people won't just acknowledge Jesus' point. Like, you know, can we not have
that
a debate about...
you shouldn't kill indiscriminately. I understand that.
Right. And why is it such a hard sell for someone like Maggie and Daryl, who have been along from the beginning?
I guess I don't agree on those points, because I think Daryl has had that tortured out of him.
Well, and also Maggie got Glenn... here's the thing, the sluggish pace of the storytelling makes that seem like ancient history.
It does, but it's honestly been like 2 days.
Yeah, like so she is all on the warpath because they beat her husband's brains out in front of her while she's like carrying his unborn child.
I get it. They both think that these people are inhuman monsters and deserve nothing but death.
But what's weird is like,
but Jesus believes the exact polar opposite of that.
Yeah.
That there is no circumstance under which you should kill these people.
Right.
And I come down in the middle.
And honestly, not even if they're holding a gun to your head. You know, like there's...
Yeah, no.
Yeah, Jesus just doesn't kill anyone, which is... Have we seen him kill anybody?
Man, I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably.
Right. Let's who cares? Let's move on. Rosita is now driving Michonne.
What the fuck?
Michonne took off from Alexandria in the driver's seat. At some point, Rosita's like, okay, pull over. You've driven 15 minutes. It's my turn.
How far?
What are you going to do? You going to fall asleep? Are you some kind of fucking Iron Woman over there? You got to let me take a turn on this road trip, Michonne.
I think they should have just had Jesus driving.
I think every time they switched the camera back, it should have been someone else in the driver's seat.
Right.
Or, yeah, Jesus actually...
Jesus is driving.
No,
they
don't acknowledge
the
him. They don't acknowledge him. He's just their co-pilot.
Right.
Oh, God.
Yeah, what the fuck, man? It's not implied that they stopped at all.
There had to be a cut scene. Like, these episodes are spaghetti.
They
like,
are.
They're shot by different people. Like, last episode of four different credited writers. That's a hallmark of someone cutting a bunch of stuff and riffle shuffling it.
Yeah.
Michonne talks a mess about how this alarm has been going off in her head, which, you know, is fine for what it is. And she just wants to see. She doesn't believe Rick's own handwritten letter that everything went. She wants to see for herself that the sanctuary is blockaded and then she can be at peace.
Yeah. Talk about trust issues. Jesus.
Yeah. Jesus. Talk about trust issues. I'm going to let everyone know. So the alarms don't go off in her head. What does happen is opera music starts to fill it.
Yeah, that's right.
And this starts the very special Christmas episode of The Walking Dead that I was briefly excited for a good 5 minutes until it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, I hear this, like, otherworldly, and I'm like, oh my God, they're gonna discover the miracle of Christmas this episode. I'm now re-engaged.
Who do you think needs Christmas the most out of this group?
Jesus.
Jesus? Okay. He probably knows
well,
the spirit of Christmas.
Well, it is his day. I mean, come on.
I think it's Daryl. I think Daryl needs a little Christmas joy.
Yeah. Daryl needs... I think Daryl would like coal in a stocking. He's like, I can warm up my beans with this tonight.
Yeah.
Don't have to build a fire. Just set this on. I don't know. I guess that's Aaron.
Aaron could use some Christmas
cheer.
Aaron's
probably the most freshly tortured person.
Easily.
With an asterisk by Rick, who is naked in the box and may be tortured at any minute.
Uh-huh.
Every minute he spends in a trash compound is a Geneva act of torture. So then we're in the woods, appropriate of nothing. And Carl's just suddenly there, and he's been staking out the zombie trap that catches a zombie, and the Sadiq guy that we saw earlier in the season dispatches the zombie violently, and then Carl has a conversation with him.
How did this occur?
How
did Carl find this guy?
That's the thing. Like,
there was no indication that he knew where he was from or anything.
They had the start of the quest.
Yeah. At the gas station,
and that interaction, and then him coming back and leaving food and saying, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no, like, B step that would, like, have this impetus of, like, why are you out there? Why are you staking out this? Like, this seems just, like, utter coincidence, and it comes out of nowhere.
Also, if you're going to get worked up about coming out of nowhere, this is maybe not the scene to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to let it slide a little bit.
Okay.
Because there are much more egregious examples of it.
Yeah, true. So he introduces himself to this guy who we find out his name is Sadiq. That's the guy who Rick fired warning shots and drove him off in the opener. He gives him food and water, administers the three questions, which I like seeing the three questions. I think the three questions are good.
Honestly, I kind of like most of this scene.
Yeah.
With some glaring
exceptions.
They bond
over the mothers, the fact that the mother, he's citing Lori as font of motherly wisdom. I'm wearing my Lori Fiesta shirt that we issued when she died in the show.
Uh-huh.
I'm a little side-eyeing Carl there, but, you know, no one wants to believe their mom's a complete monster. I get it. This guy's answers are hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
He's killed 237 walkers.
Give or take.
That's just stupid fucking writing. How could you keep track after 50?
Yeah.
Like, unless he has a tattoo where he's kept, like some kind of Zaz from Batman-style hash mark system on his forearm. Mm. This is dumb. He might as well have said a million. Infinity. How many have you killed? Infinity plus one. Infinity plus infinity. Like it's just a preposterous amount of zombies to kill and keep track of.
Sure.
He's killed one person who apparently was bit and was going to turn, and he had to kill him anyway.
Yep.
And that was the other two answers. And he also revealed that his mom thought that killing zombies would free their souls. And he got on your parents, and Carl's like, oh, you're right, and he shoots him in the face. And that's the scene.
No, that didn't happen.
He says, no, I'm gonna honor my dad by bringing you back to Alexandria. Come with me.
Yeah.
And then we cut to a scene, and what we come back to is just as perplexing.
Sure.
Henry's fighting with zombies because he heard Carol's call to arms and took it literally. This is an 8-year-old boy with a broomstick, I'm reminding you. He's fighting like 5 or 6 zombies.
Two.
Oh, was it?
I think it was just two, but yeah.
Okay, he's fighting 2 zombies. Carol comes in, shoots them, and scolds them. And then he scolds her back, and then she's like, okay, fuck it. I'm season 7. I don't care anymore. Come with me.
Have this gun, kid. I know you've never had any training, but you watched
right.
the training, so
right.
you're probably
it's like a
good.
It's kind of like a broomstick.
Yeah, just...
It's more like a boomstick, but... I want to know this. Who issued this kid the armor? Or... Mm. Is the armor just kind of lying around available for anyone that'll take it? Or was, like, did they give him his brother's armor? And if so, why did it fit? And why wasn't it covered in blood? And why did it look brand new? Like, I feel like someone
didn't
gave...
Morgan have that armor?
Maybe, oh, you're right.
Maybe Morgan gave him the armor.
But after... his armor was all battered and kind of torn. And, you know, I'm fascinated by the question of, like, where does a kid get this brand new Kingdom armor?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like someone at the armory handed it to him and, like, as a joke.
Maybe.
Like, who gives a 8-year-old say, hey, I'm requisitioning some armor. Okay. Whatever. That's it. The saviors are brought into the hilltop and introduced to the new jail. And Maggie throws Gregory in there. Discuss. You seem to like this part of the episode, so I was like,
"Yeah,
I feel like I've been monologuing a bit."
Yeah, I like that Maggie has let Gregory hang himself, essentially, and that she kind of gets it, in my opinion. Like, these are truly bad people, and if it's not in evidence enough, then dumb fuck rat face tries to
evil
pull
Jesus.
A gun on no one.
Right.
Like, what do you think is going to happen when you get your hands on that gun? You're inside a fence.
You're going to own
this
place.
You can't take a hostage.
You're going to own this place.
What is he going to do with
this
gun?
That's his opinion. Just sit tight. We're going to own this place.
Yeah, he's an
idiot.
I
pull one more gun. I get a sharp rock. We're going to own this place.
It's ridiculous.
This guy's the dumbest fucking person. Like,
he is. And I'm glad to see him butted in the face twice.
Yeah.
From Maggie. That was much needed.
Yeah. And I like the whole idea of, like, there's zero tolerance. Like, we're going to feed you and shelter you in the stockade, but that's it. Like, I kind of hope Evil Jesus dies in episode 2, because he won't be able to do that. He won't. He's going to get caught with a rock, and he's going to get drug out and shot in the face, and I finally can be at peace.
I just like Maggie's actions this episode. I think she's very level-headed about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And unlike most people in the show.
Yeah, and, you know, war changes people. When you see your husband's brains beat out in front of you, you get a little bit harder line towards, you know, the enemy forces. That's why you shouldn't get in the war just willy-nilly. Fucking dehumanizes people destroys a lot of lives. Jesus has got an interesting acting approach. He is acting as if he's kind of ambivalent about everything he's seeing happening, even though Maggie hasn't give the these are just hostages speech yet. Why is Jesus seeing this as anything but a unqualified success? Why is he ambivalent?
Because he's read ahead in the script, I guess.
He wants to know why the stockade doesn't have a roof. They're going to just sit in here and, like, you have the sun bake on their heads. Why aren't there cots? Are these going to sleep on the ground in the mud? Come on, Maggie. This is inhuman treatment you're giving. This is what you'd keep animals confined. Is he going to, like, Amnesty International her?
I don't know.
All right. So Sadiq and Carl jump a herd of walkers, like a 5 or 6 of them. They're eating a deer. Again, this scene comes out of nowhere.
There are grand total, I counted them, 7 walkers in this entire scene. 3 of them, which are chomping away on some kind of deer carcass. And
did that deer die naturally in the woods? Because there's no fucking way those zombies
caught
like, I don't
are
know.
Are you kidding?
Maybe
stealth zombies?
Maybe if 12 can kill a tiger, 6 can kill a deer.
Easily. Yeah, but they approach these 3 walkers, and even the 3 walkers that they approach get the best of them.
It's
a fucking joke that these people
remarkably incompetent.
Have survived for 2 years in the wilderness.
Sadiq has killed 237 walkers. No fucking way.
Looks like
he
hasn't killed one.
No. Like, they try to lampshade this a bit with Carl saying, did you trap and kill most of these people? Like maybe that he doesn't have just open field tackle zombie experience, but Carl does. This is, like, at some point the guy decided that Carl is, enough of a facsimile of a man that he's not going to struggle with 1 or 2 zombies. This is not 12-year-old Chandler Riggs in his father's hat that's 5 times too big for him. Like,
Carl's 16-year-old Carl.
These zombies' heads are pimples ready to burst. Like, there's this awesome part where Sadiq takes this dude with the branch transfixed through him and rams him into a tree, and it's like a full head explosion.
And they both have knives out, ready to go.
Yes.
And these zombies
and
spin
the
around, and then they grapple them.
Right. So they take the first 2 down, so now it's a 4-on-2 situation, and they get overwhelmed.
Yeah. No, it's...
They're back
every
in
time
a forest.
They do
it's
this.
Also, I forgot, I didn't say they're in a small tool shed. They're in a fucking forest where they can fall back. They can do anything they want, and they almost get killed until Carl finally has to pull his gun out and kill the last 2 of them that were about to bite his ass.
No, every time they do this, it becomes less and less interesting, less and less believable, more of a farce. And they fall back to this idea that the walkers are going to somehow sneak up on these trained and frankly badasses.
Right.
These people are supposed to be at the height of their powers right now. There should be no Walker group on the planet that can take them out.
No individual person from Rick's crew should struggle with six zombies in an open terrain situation.
Absolutely not.
Because it's like, even if it's important to kill these zombies right now to honor this guy's dead mother, fine. But nothing says you have to kill them without giving any ground.
Yeah.
Or making use of your terrain or outthinking a person that literally doesn't have a brain.
Uh-huh. No, it's ridiculous.
This is just a garbage
show. It's a laughable scene.
Michonne and Rosita overhear the Savior's talk. They follow the opera music back to this warehouse. Mm. And there's actually interesting nuggets of stuff that came from this overheard conversation. Like, they refer to the highway as the herdway.
Hmm.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Because, like, it makes sense that zombies would get stuck on a, like, what zombie gets off at a 465 loop in Indianapolis? Like, they're not smart enough to take the on-ramps. Yeah. There's big cement Jersey barricades on either side. They're just going to walk endlessly around that thing. Mm-hmm. I like it. It's pretty funny. They refer to their big speaker box system as the fat lady. I thought it was pretty interesting. And their plan was, they drove up with a resupply. They saw the Saviors surrounded. They fucked off this location where they knew they had the fat lady. And the fat lady is essentially a flatbed truck that's just loaded with PA systems. And they play music at max volume, and they lead the herd away. It's a Pied Piper. It's actually a sound plan.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not going to happen because Michonne and Rosita are going to kill these people. But it's not going to be like, I'm just ready for Michonne and Rosita to come and bag these guys. They got the advantage.
Yeah.
But instead, Michonne has to kick a tennis ball.
Yeah.
The very first time guns are fired, Rosita is so badly rattled, she drops her gun and accidentally kicks it underneath a warehouse shelf. It's just remarkably incompetent again.
Mm-hmm. No, they want us to simultaneously believe that this group of survivors could take out Negan's entire operation.
Yes.
But also believe that these people are so incompetent they get in these kinds of situations on the regular.
It's Keystone Cops, man.
It's a fucking joke.
Yeah.
There are nobody in this group, and I'm talking Enid, I'm talking Judith, nobody would fucking be this stupid.
Right.
In this situation.
Does Michonne carry a pistol on her hip? Because the whole time I'm thinking as her and evil Michonne, because there's essentially an evil Michonne character who has a piece of rebar and they have a sword fight.
Yeah.
Michonne has fucked up that katana so bad after this fight. I just, every time she's parrying, I'm like, your sword's going to be just a fucking nicked piece of shit after this.
Yep.
But like, I don't understand why Michonne doesn't have a gun and just whip it out Indiana Jones style and kill her. Why the long rebar katana fight? Why does Rosita, she gets this RPG and then the guy sees it and is like, okay, little girl, you're not going to use an RPG on her. And she just shoots him.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, like, attempt to carry out the threat or, like, you know what I'm saying?
No,
like,
that's the right move. I think it's the right move.
Really?
Yeah.
Just she
blast
just dies.
Him. Well, I mean, obviously, it's the right move assuming that the RPG blast would not take you out.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, you don't... Why monologue? Why give like him the option or anything? He's clearly a bad guy trying to kill you. Kill him.
Because the RPG round is a precious resource, because it will probably kill you if you shoot it. And if you could talk this guy into dropping his gun and like, I don't really give a care. Like, my lover was beat to death by your fucking madman. I'm ready to go. My ticket's punched. I'm just trying to take as many of you out. If I can take you out, like go crazy. Like, make this guy think like I'm really going to die or try. But no, she just fucking... uses an irreplaceable RPG round.
I feel like I would be complaining if they had done it the other way.
Really?
If they had her talk to this guy for more than 1 second. She rattles off like an awesome Schwarzenegger one-liner and then blows his ass up, I'm calling bullshit.
You don't think that her distracting this guy until Michonne can come and behead him and then they still have the RPG round to do something actually cool with would not be better?
I mean, better or...
I'm trying to like fucking be Bob Vila and fix this place up. Bob Vila would just get back in his truck,
burn it to the ground,
drive it away. Yeah. Be the shortest episode of this old house.
Nothing I can do for you.
Yeah. So somehow evil Michonne gets away from Michonne with the fat lady, and she goes away singing. And they get to the end of the street as Michonne and Rosita look like, oh, we fucked it up again.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets T-boned by this garbage truck driven by Daryl and Tara.
All right, my notes say fuck this show.
Okay, why? Why?
Because of the coincidence. Mm. What a fucking coincidence.
You don't think Daryl could hear the music?
I don't think Daryl would be on the exact same road at the exact same time.
With a garbage truck.
With a garbage truck. Because, look, there was no music playing. Fact of the matter is, once they got into the warehouse, there was no more music, right? And so he would have had to, in the span of her driving from wherever that truck was parked inside the shelter, out to this T intersection, he would have had to have heard it and diverted down that street and saw her coming, which he couldn't have done,
because
it's all behind buildings, and rammed into her. Like, it's the biggest coincidence of all in this show. The biggest fucking coincidence I've ever seen, and it's so stupid.
I mean, the thing is, like, I think you could probably defend this in the Talking Dead style, but, like, why?
No, so, you can't. Can't.
Carol goes to confront the king. She starts to take a shotgun to the lock, and Jerry says, dude, the door's not locked. This is a good scene.
She says, cover your ears, which is the biggest fucking joke I've ever heard in this show.
Right.
Cover your fucking ears? Yeah, Are you kidding me? Rosita just shot off an RPG.
Yeah.
30 feet in front of her.
Yeah. Like, no one
she
can hear
say,
any
hey,
dialogue.
She didn't say, hey, Michonne, cover your ears.
No one can hear any dialogue in the show. It's just...
Carl fired a gun right next to his ear twice in this episode. What the fuck are you talking about? Cover your ears.
Yeah. So this is actually a good scene from a better show.
Okay.
This is again the scene from the alternate universe where Darabont's still directing and producing the show. And he goes, look, I know what you want and I know what I should be doing, but I just can't. And he lampoons his own I Still Smile. The thing that I thought was really good is when she says, why did you come visit me? Because, like, they've had this weird romance thing, but he's kind of like, as like his moment of honesty, it's like, because you made me feel real. And I'm like, Carol...
Then maybe you should be real.
Carol, that's what I'm saying. Like, Carol is the actual, like, is the done the exact same thing, except for she's faked it until she made it.
Yeah.
And I guess Ezekiel has too, but he doesn't have the confidence. Like, you are a king because you actually led people into battle successfully. And then you didn't. You had a setback. And again, that's a hell of a setback.
But look at what you've built, right?
But look, like, what you did.
These people are living in a stable community here that you helped them build.
And the tiger was your foot in the door, but you've been this guy since then. And, like, I think again, this is a pretty persuasive. And nobody repeated themselves, and nobody made old arguments. And it was, I liked it. It builds on everything we know about Carol's character and everything we know about Ezekiel's character, and it feels very natural. It's the undigested corn kernel in this cow pie of an episode that we pick through, and it's not bad.
Ugh. I feel like Carol was, like, kind of burying the lead here, though. Dude, you don't get to mope squat in the community's only theater. Like, we've got a live production of Hamlet
been
working on.
We have a broom closet. If you're just going to be that, you're going to be go back to be the janitor at the zoo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stop holding court.
Right. You don't get the theater. We need it. We want it.
Yeah.
It's a big building, man.
Evil Jesus is back in a hilltop. He's trying to cut his bonds with a sharp rock. Christopher Goldberg knocks it out of his hands and says, hey, what do you think you're doing? I got a bad walk-in. Do you got a good walk-in?
No.
Oh, man. No, too bad. It's too bad. Because this character cries out for a decent walk-in.
He does.
And the evil Jesus derisively says, you think this people will kill us? Keep it together. This place will be ours. We get enough sharp rocks and free hands, and we're going to, like, tear our way out of this barbed wire cage.
And Gregory's eyes bug out of his head.
Yeah.
He's hearing all this.
He's like, oh, these people need a leader. And I'm not that, but I'm a reasonable facsimile, maybe. These guys will seem awful dumb. I don't know what Gregory's play is. I don't know what Gregory's play is.
I can only imagine he wants to report back to Maggie and try and get out of the hot water he's in.
The only way you can get out of my hot water is to die screaming. Yeah. So I'm hoping that happens real soon. Aaron and Enid are in Maggie's Godfather den, which this whole scene, like, of him, this is extremely long take of him emoting about how bad he feels about Eric, which is really good. The whole time I just couldn't keep thinking about, you bring me this thing about your boyfriend on the day of my, you know, Gracie's circumcision. I don't know. She's a female baby. I don't think you do that. Christening. That's what the Godfather would say.
Yeah. You might say that.
She looks good. I mean, there's another decent scene. Like, Aaron missing Eric. Like, I felt like that's pretty good. Like, the whole, I mean, I don't know what it's like to lose a mate like that, but like the whole idea of like you're bummed and the person you would normally talk about these strong feelings with right. is dead, and that's why you're bummed. Like, sounds like a pretty bad place to be in.
Sure.
And I feel for him because he's a good guy in a really bad show. And I thought Maggie can empathize. You know, Maggie said she can empathize, and we know she can.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron knows she can, and she looks good with Gracie, which is essentially a practice baby for her.
Basically, yeah.
It's like those eggs they give you in home ec and tell you not to break for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like, oh, I dropped it on Ted, but it's just to save your baby. Just to save your baby. Soon as we don't need him anymore. So this is a hostage. Don't think I'm mothering this baby. This is a hostage. As soon as I don't need this baby, right to the, I'm just going to stick my thumb into its soft spot until it stops wiggling.
Wow.
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
This show has made me a monster, Jim.
Yeah.
I've lived long enough to become the villain.
Just don't destroy the brain. I want to see a zombie.
That's true. You can't, you'd have to, so just break the baby's neck. That wouldn't be a very entertaining zombie.
No, it wouldn't.
Stab it in the heart.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones style.
Sure.
Get the fucking gold cloaks in there. They know how to murder babies.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, she unveils the whole, they're only alive because we might need them. If we don't, we can't let them live thing. After Jesus comes in and thanks her. So now Jesus can look hangdog.
Yeah.
But before, I don't understand what his problem is. Aaron heads out and joins insurrection because he wants to do his part to make sure we win, even though their part is just to chill out and wait for Rick for just 2 days. This isn't like an open-ended thing. It's like 2 days, everything happens anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And Enid wants to go because she's contractually obligated at least 3 episodes of screen time.
This is like if I order a package off Amazon.
Uh-huh.
And I decide, like, the next day, you know what? I'm fucking going to Amazon.
Right.
I'm going to go to the factory, and I'm going to take it myself.
Two-day shipping.
I can't really handle this Prime stuff.
Right, they say it's in Columbus, Ohio, and that's pretty close, but I don't think it's going
to
make it.
Right, I just need to see it. Just turn the alarm bells off.
Daryl, Tara, Michonne, and Marisita pull up close enough to see the sanctuary, and then Daryl says he wants to end this thing right now, and I have no idea what the fuck he's going to try to do with this garbage
truck. I think he's going to ram the building.
But what will that ram the front doors
down?
Yeah,
it lets all the walkers in, which is what he essentially told Rick. Yeah.
And by the way, if Rosita had talked that guy out of,
yeah,
you know,
true.
RPG, they could have done it.
You know what? I bet this is not the only RPG round in that building.
Oh, I wonder if they have one.
They had a whole case of them, didn't they?
Did they?
Like, Abraham lost it to them?
So, I think the case had 4 rounds, and we've seen 3 fired. But, I mean, that's, okay. Who knows? They could have a whole, like you said, they could have cases and cases of them.
Yeah. I can't imagine that that was the last round.
Right. So, maybe they will. Maybe we'll get to see Daryl.
But he fires up that truck. Like, he's
going to drive it
right in. Because
Daryl set the lakes
in.
On fire. He blew up the bikers. We saw Rosita shoot this. So, there's been 3 RPG rounds fired in the last 3 seasons.
Yeah.
Okay. Jadis marks a possibly runic, weird-looking A on a container that Rick's being held in, naked.
She's just anarchist.
As Rick stares wild-eyed from the eye holes that are in the thing. And he's naked. It's dark. And why is there a container marked A again? And there's probably a reason I could find on Reddit or listen on Talking Dead, but I don't give even one shit. So, that's the episode.
Right.
I had fun talking about it.
Yeah, no, it's
more fun
time.
Talking about it than I did watching it.
For sure.
It was a pretty glorious live watch too, if you're into that kind of thing. Stealth Club ad. When she blew, like, the back to back punch of her blowing a dude up in a warehouse and Daryl plowing that truck with the garbage. It was pretty strong. Pretty strong.
Yeah, there were some good moments.
This is now a ad for a club. It would have been helpful for me to mention club.baldmove.com during housekeeping when I largely previewed club content. And I completely forgot to do that because...
Well, you're getting it now. Reminder, like, pause the podcast.
Just in case you've forgotten, we're terrible at everything part of this job other than actually watching things with our eyeballs and speaking to this microphone. Like, marketing, sales, I don't even know what they are. But repetition for emphasis, I was taught at one point in my youth, and here's the club for the millionth time, club.baldmove.com. If you like what we're doing and you want us to keep doing it and keep expanding and also to get more stuff, because there's actually more Bald Move that happens behind the scenes in the club that is gatekept at club.baldmove.com, and you put in your credit card or... There's probably another payment system.
Yeah, Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon Pay. That's right. But not PayPal, because they're shit weasels.
Yeah, they don't like us.
They said, no way, Jose. We're not going to unlock our gateway to the likes of you, because they heard us say on numerous podcasts we're terrible at everything except for podcasting. And that made the financial institution, but Visa, MasterCard, they're cool with this. Amazon, Jeff Bezos, and us, we're tight. We're so tight.
Once again.
Club.baldmove.com. You got lunch. We're kicking off the Christmas celebration and drinking our first, because we got a booze calendar. I guess. There's how do you tell? How do you explain Christmas in two sentences? You can't.
Yeah. I mean, it starts with booze.
It starts
obviously
for Bald Move Christmas. It starts with we get a what is it called? An advent calendar, but with booze. We open up one a day and we drink it and we talk about it and we talk about these movies and we get a little sentimental towards the end of the month, because that's what you do with Christmas. And it's starting off next month. It kicks off the 1st of December, this year Friday. Go to club.baldmove.com to get all of our previous Christmas celebrations and prepare yourself for this one. Club.baldmove.com. I assume, Jim, that we have feedback, or have everyone just abandoned us in droves? Has everybody decided to be like Enid and Aaron and Daryl, and they're just going like, you know, I just... We don't believe this podcast is coming out. We're going to go. We got to go. They're just sitting outside the Bald Move headquarters.
No.
Instead of sending feedback.
No, we do have some feedback this week. We got several pages of it. I cut a lot of the stuff that was from last week because it was from last week. So we're going to talk a little bit about it, but not a ton.
Yeah, what's the hot new take for Shit and Pants episode?
I don't know that there's like a hot new take or anything. Let's go with Barry C. from the UK. It says, it took a long time, but finally the whole why hasn't one of Negan's henchmen killed him already debate finally makes sense. I quite like this episode. He's talking about 805, not this one. With Negan's philosophy of people being resources, why the saviors are called the saviors, the workers doing what they do for protection, and that being the key to everyone's subservience. It finally made sense, and actually did a reasonable job of articulating that maybe Rick's gang are the evil ones in this world. It's still the dumbest show on TV, but credit where it's due. Do you agree?
Not really. I think they advance that argument, sure, and I just don't know why I would see them as the, like, Rick has never trotted out 10 people that love each other and beat one or two in the death in the head just as a show. Like, you have to embrace Negan's worldview to think that is a morally just thing to do. That you have to essentially treat humans like cattle, to be cowed and pinned up and used as a resource. I don't subscribe to that. So, no, I think they advance that, but like, I think it's pretty shitty compared to what Rick's trying to do.
Yeah. With you. Hunter from Birmingham. And I definitely wrote Birmingham.
This
in
is
my
this
notes.
Our Hunter? Is this
I,
the
I think so.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
But Birmingham sounds like a much worse place to be from than Birmingham. Because I don't know.
Birmingham.
Yeah.
Birmingham. Effingham is the way to... I'd love to be from that town.
Effingham?
I'm giving Effingham about where you're from.
Hunter says, I've heard a lot of people talk about the show in context of it taking place over several years. When looking at a detailed timeline based on the evidence from the show, it actually has only taken place over about 1 year, 8 months. I won't bore you with details, but quick breakdown is... Season 2 to 3, like the break between those, had about 7 months, mm-hmm. and season 3-4 had about 6 months. So, all in, when we're talking about what we've seen on the show, it's over the course of a couple of months, like that we've actually seen real time. He says, I always find these time frames to be surprisingly small given we've been watching for over the course of 8 years. It's also interesting to consider that prison stuff, such as the sickness and second governor attack, happened less than 4 months ago.
God, no, how did they walk from, or how did they...
I don't know. You got to go to wikia.com, walkingdead.wikia.com.
So there's actually a timeline.
Yeah. And also, Rick only lost Lori 10 months ago. I just found this stuff interesting, thought I would share.
Yeah, no,
yeah, that's the thing. Like, so many people... I don't know. It is interesting that over the course of 8 years, we've only seen that much time. But then I think of, like, Breaking Bad, where mm-hmm. that show, entire show, lasted 2 years.
2 years. With five seasons. With a 4 month time jump and a year time jump.
Right. Right. We had to jump way far near the end of that. So, yeah, I don't think that's like unusual for a show necessarily, but it does feel like longer on The Walking Dead.
Well, that's because it's a narrative mess. Like, there's no through line. Like, Game of Thrones gets away of having its cake and eating it, too, that, like, it's very hazy when you start pinning down the details about, is this show unfolded over years, or has it just been, like, a single year or a couple, because, like, you know, the characters visibly age and... Mm-hmm. And they kind of like play or have a way to kind of have it both ways, depending on which end of the telescope you look through, I guess. And it's fine because like every season had like a clear narrative that built up and like was memorable and like, oh, this was the event that happened. And like you can think back of like, you know, all the different, like I can tell you the through line for every fucking season. Mm-hmm. After season 4 of The Walking Dead, it gets fucking real hazy. Like I couldn't tell you which one had Terminus. Was Terminus the main thrust? Was that the year that they got away from the... I think that's the year the prison finally collapsed, but the prison collapsed twice. Uh-huh. And like, and some of these characters have gone through the same arc 3 times. And it's just got this weirdly weird way of inflating time. So it's genuinely shocking to hear that less than 2 years of time have actually taken place.
Yeah. It feels like a lot more.
Yeah.
Jenna W., kind of along those lines, has a question. For the love of God, please tell me how far along Maggie is.
Right?
Is the human gestational period longer in the zombie apocalypse? They're not even trying to make her look pregnant. But when you line this up with the timeline as expressed by Wikia, when did she become pregnant? Like, man, season 6?
Here's the other problem they have is Carl.
Season 7?
Carl was like 9 years old, and now he's like 18.
Right.
Real time. And
real
they,
time is passing.
They've also
faster.
Aged him up to be kind of like a 16-ish, 17-year-old kid as far as his responsibility and his, you know.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
I mean, I don't know, because season 7 apparently took place over 2 weeks. Season 8 has been like a day or two so far. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember exactly when Maggie is found to be pregnant, but it could be as little as like 3 weeks ago.
Wait, how can it be less than 2 years? Because Maggie conceived, gave birth, and Judith is now a toddler. So they're just saying that the ages of the characters, the visible ages of the characters doesn't matter.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know. Maybe the Maggie thing makes some kind of sense given the weird timeline structure. Let's go to Gretchen from Philly. Says,
Remember the plot point where Maggie needed a prenatal doctor, like constant care, or that baby?
But that was only like 2 days ago. That's the thing.
I know. Like I'm saying, remember, like,
it happened a year ago in real time, but
that's the one of the things that makes things feel foggy. Like there was a whole season where she needed a fucking prenatal doctor, or this baby was going to fall out of that torn ass womb.
Yeah.
And season and a half from now, it's like they, you know, like in a fever dream, Gabriel remembered that she needed a daughter, but the fucking writers sure haven't, because she's a field marshal now. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. That's a much more interesting role than her confined to bed rest and getting fucking sponged by Enid and Jesus all day.
Yeah.
But like, why rip her uterus in the first place then?
I don't know. They needed something to do with her, I guess. Gretchen from Philly asks, could the helicopter be connected to Fear the Walking Dead? I've always wondered how they were going to get someone from California to DC. I remember hearing that a character from Fear was going to show up this season.
Okay.
I don't know if that's happening, but they confirmed that Morgan is going over to Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh, is that what the thing
Lenny
is?
Lenny James is, yeah.
Interesting.
So maybe he gets that helicopter and heads out.
His crazy ass going over that show, huh?
I don't know what the timeline is like in Fear the Walking Dead. Has it been 2 years? Could he show up in that show and everybody be like, yep, got it?
Yeah, I would like to know, honestly, because I've heard people talk in hushed tones about season 3 of Fear the Walking Dead. People that I respect and admire.
Uh-huh.
As, like, the best zombie show on television of all time, with season 1 of The Walking Dead being part of that. Like, I think season 1 of The Walking Dead is my personal high watermark. It wasn't perfect.
No, it's not perfect.
But it was a pretty good, confident first step in this world. I don't know. The problem is, like...
I like Dead Set.
I guess I'd like a no-shit answer of whether season 3 of Fear the Walking Dead is actually as good as season 1 of The Walking Dead. Because I kind of wouldn't mind I don't know. That's a problem. Like, I wouldn't mind jumping back in. Do I need to see the last season and a half? Because I'm like two and a half seasons behind. I stopped watching at the halfway mark of season one, just like you did.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Bex from California says, so I know that the popular opinion is for this season to light fire under its own arse and get it over with already, but in the last two episodes, I've been encouraged by the slow bits. It's the slow character study dialogue that made me fall in love with this show in the first place. The genius was
that
the whole zombie thing just was just an animated piece of scenery in the background of truly great storytelling. That was the idea.
That's true.
Starting off.
That was the idea. That was the thing we were all invested in.
She goes on, the Gabriel / Negan scene in The Big Scary You was reminiscent of the Beth and Daryl episode where the writers actually made me care about Beth. I may actually care about the fate of Negan and Gabriel now. And in the most recent episode, they took some care in introducing a new character, Sadiq. Some may see this as just plotting through the plot, but if they took the same care with the established cast again, there would be happier fans. I'm truly over all the bullets and rocket launchers, CG heroes, and characters whose most interesting trait is their hairstyle. Just get back to character development and retrain the watchers to be okay with the slow stuff when it pays off in a meaningful death or even more satisfying survival.
Yeah, I just want to. Who the fuck wrote the scene with like Ezekiel and Carol? And why can't they do that good on everything?
Yeah.
Like, and if it's like, well,
because it takes time to craft
it's
a good scene.
And then we're like handcuffed because the place we start, like, okay, but you know, stop moving to places that you can't, like. Like, it's all well and good to be Vince Gilligan and be like, oh, every season we paint ourselves in the corner and then the fun and challenge depends on what, get out without fucking up the paint job. Well, you're not Vince Gilligan. So fucking stop trying to do that.
Yeah. There's a certain level of skill that's required to pull that off.
Yeah. Like, go again. I've been saying, and then, you know, I'm not going to say it again. I'm not. Yeah. We've prescribed treatments that would make this show better, and no one gives a shit. So, yeah.
Maybe AMC should hire us to be the writers, the showrunners.
Dude.
We'll be the duffers of The Walking Dead.
I promise you we could not do worse.
You're right.
Because we would actually this show as a steaming pile of shit, and we'd be afraid to death to fuck it up. We wouldn't have this smug, oh, we're doing everything, and it's awesome, and it's cool kind of thing to us.
Yeah. Matt S. says, I've been thinking about what could improve the show. Here we go. Maybe there's another suggestion lying in here. And give the characters some depth. And I realize Gimple has set the bar pretty low, but how about Lost-style flashbacks? It'd be a great way to explore backstory, introduce motive and mystery, and avoid tedious scenes like Negan confessionals. You'd also have the added novelty of seeing the actors in normal circumstances after a decent night's sleep. Yeah, I think this is something we've talked about.
We used to like flashbacks. We used to be excited, like, oh, are we going to get a pre-apocalyptic flashback? Or
they
flashback
did that one
to the fall?
Time ever that I can think of, which is Lori flashing back
to
talking
her.
About what an abusive asshole Rick was.
Oh.
Essentially. Or neglectful, let's say that.
Well, they also flash back to her and Shane overlooking Atlanta being firebombed, which was cool. Like, that was a really cool...
I think that was the same episode, yeah.
Okay, that was a really cool... Like, they've done a time or two, and then there's, like, the Negan flashbacks, which did not work out very well at all.
The Governor flashbacks.
The Governor flashbacks did not work out well at all.
That wasn't, like, pre-apocalypse, though. I think he's talking, like... With Lost, they flashbacked, you know, to before the island, right?
Especially, like, every time you meet a new character, wouldn't mind... I don't need to flashback, but have a conversation. Like, anytime you talk with someone, like a coworker or anything, and you're together with them more than a couple days, like, that shit starts coming out. Like, why can't we get those conversations?
Yeah.
There's fucking oceans of time in this show that's squandered. Why can't we...
Here's the thing I liked about the Lost flashbacks.
Like, am I remembering this right, that Henry is, like, the third... Like, isn't this the third time this shit has happened? Like,
the third Ezekiel, brother?
Like, King Ezekiel got their dad killed, and then their brother killed, and now, like...
And now he's gonna get little Henry killed.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we jokingly refer to one guy as Carhartt. He's been in the C's show for five fucking years.
Yeah, he's not a main, though. He's not one of the main cast
members.
But
neither was Chief O'Brien. But I fucking knew more about him after the next, let alone Deep Space Nine. Like, you eventually flesh these characters out in seven seasons of bullshit.
Yeah.
And they're not doing that. And it's not like...
They're not.
you know, Star Trek sure had like 8 more episodes per season to fill out, but you know, again, fucking like, I can this guy meet a Keiko O'Brien and they get a charming mixed Starfleet and Japanese marriage ceremony? Like, can I get some color to these people other than the main ones?
Yeah,
I mean, look at Eric. The only reason we gave a shit about Eric is because they've kind of done a reasonable job of fleshing out Aaron.
Yeah.
So, but like, how much screen time has Eric and Aaron gotten in 3 years?
Not much.
10 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. The thing that I really liked about the Lost flashbacks is they let the audience in on a piece of information about the characters without kind of cluing the rest of the group
that
in.
That is a good point.
So that you can see, like,
it's an asymmetrical way to tell the story.
And they don't tell you in real time, like, in the current
this
situation.
This is significant.
Right. They're not like, with Bob, remember how he had the drinking problem, right? And it took, like, all of these things for that to come out. Well, if we had seen that he had the drinking problem beforehand, and then we knew, okay, he's got this problem, and then we saw what he's doing, we could say, okay, this is why he's doing the stuff he's doing, instead of, after the fact, realizing, oh, I guess that must be why he was doing this thing back there.
I mean, the thing is like, I just got done watching American Horror Story Season 7, and Ryan Murphy's lost his goddamn mind of flashbacks. Like, and it became like a joke that, like, he clearly got a new idea that did not fit the script at all. So he does like 6 flashbacks to retcon everyone's characters and motivation so it can now serve this new plot point.
Oh, no.
And it got to be where the last episode of this season had so many flashbacks, I didn't even know what to do. It was like I needed a fucking Inception-style infographic to explain where, like, did Evan Peters hit limbo? Is he going to, like, start like, crawling in a sandcastle with an old Japanese man? Japanese figuring heavily in the feedback section.
Yeah. There is a katana in the show.
So. There is a katana. That's glue that binds us.
Yeah. Okay. Michael B. says, "What's up, guys? I thought overall this was a pretty good episode, especially watching a man literally explode into nothing." I think he's on
That's an awesome, funny, but it's not a good episode.
No, I think he's on The Walking Dead as far as train. I hope.
Me too. Choo-choo.
I do wonder why Rick is so hell-bent on making a deal with these filthy trash people, as Negan would say. Also, when Daryl and Tara show up in just the nick of time, why would neither Michonne or Rosita say, "Hey, good thing you brought this giant truck, because this building behind us just so happens to be filled with RPGs, grenades, and other things that could be useful in, I don't know, a war?" Stupid missteps as usual, but like
an
I said,
all out war?
I think a pretty standout episode in an otherwise rough season. Yeah, obviously, Michael B., I'm sorry to disappoint. We don't agree on that. I think there were moments in this episode where you look at the show and say, damn, I wish it could be more like this more often, but there are also moments where you say, yep, this is Walking Dead.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I prefer this episode to like a last episode because it's funny. It had things that are unintentionally funny, and it had a scene or two that's good. But again, it's like, this is a slippery sliding scope and moving goalpost obstacle course of, oh, well, this season had four, like, half the episodes are good. There's one real turd and 3 forgettable, to like, oh, well, at least an episode or two. Like, they nailed the finale, or they did enough to like, this is just, like, I'm hoping they do something so ridiculous I can laugh at it rather than be fucking bored to tears.
Well, this is the thing. This is why I maybe say this is the worst half season of The Walking Dead. It's because I think every single episode so far has been one of those turds.
Yeah.
And it has, like you said, the shiny golden nugget.
That's
of corn.
What I'm saying. Like, yeah.
But even if they go just like perfect in these final two, if they bat 1,000 on the final two episodes, I still think this is the worst season of the show.
Yeah. It's
because it's already unsalvageable.
Yeah. Like, what would they have to do in the final two episodes?
I mean, for me to excuse 6 episodes of bullshit? Yeah. Nothing. There's nothing they could do. I think they've already ruined that possibility.
Well, that's a shame. But yeah, you're right. It's like, this is the point. It's kind of like in every football season where you realize your team's not going to make the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, some teams get that earlier than others.
Right.
I feel like it's ready to go. This season of Walking Dead's not going to the Super Bowl.
No, when you're 0-12.
Nope, not even gonna make the wild card round.
No.
It's going to be drafting very highly in the draft this year.
All right. Joshua says, why in the world is suddenly everyone breaking up and going out to do their own missions just because they do not like the overall status of the war so far? Isn't everything playing out exactly like they all agreed on?
Yes.
Besides the kingdom deaths, like, everything...
It's been a costly victory.
Right.
But it's so far been a victory. Every battle has been a victory.
Yeah. Beside the kingdom deaths, everything went as planned, and there is zero reason for anyone to be upset with progress. To be fair, if things are not going as planned, we would have no idea since we are never clued into what the strategy was. And I think that's a super important point. And I think it's one we kind of made in the main recap. But we don't understand why they're going off script because we don't have the script.
Right.
And I just wish I could see why Daryl thinks that Rick's plan isn't going to work.
Well, I think
what is it about the overall plan that would tell him that?
You're right. I think we're supposed to understand emotionally that Daryl doesn't feel like Rick can do the thing that needs to be done to win.
Mm-hmm.
And that he, Daryl, can easily do that, so he's gonna. Like, and I think this is kind of like if this was a better show, this would be a huge discussion, because this is the guy who, like, remember in season 2 in the farm, this is the guy who drug this guy in to be executed and tortured, and then Rick said got cold feet, and then like Daryl looked at him all confused, but like, okay, well, fuck it, you're the boss. This is now the guy working behind Rick's back because he doesn't think he's got, like, this is something that's been brewing for a while.
For sure, yeah.
But
I just wish
the show itself doesn't, like, take a moment to appreciate that. Like, I guess I guess Gimple might rightfully say, what more do you want? They had a fucking fight. They had a fist fight.
Yeah.
Daryl choked Rick out and demonstrated the superiority of his viewpoint of holds, like, illegalities of war in a post-Geneva apocalypse zombie society is stupid.
Yeah. I just wish that clearly going to the trash people is phase 2 of this plan, and has always been phase 2 of this plan. It wasn't an audible that Rick called.
Uh-huh.
If it had been an audible, because, okay, we lost the kingdom, we need more people. If we understood
right,
that
this is a desperate act of a desperate man.
If we understood that phase 2 of this plan needed an extraordinary amount of people to accomplish,
right,
then the setback of losing the kingdom would be important, and I could see why Daryl might go off the reservation and say, no, we're fucked.
Right.
The trash people are never going to help us. They backstabbed
us
already.
And we can logically evaluate those claims.
Right, but we have no idea what's coming up. We're not privy to the plan, so we just throw our fucking hands up and say,
I guess. They were always going to go to trash people even though they didn't lose the kingdom.
Right.
So
what has changed, Daryl? Why are you not on board with this plan anymore?
And yeah, like, is it possible that, like, they needed 200 and now even with the trash people, they're only going to have at best 150? And, like, Daryl's like, well, we're fucked. We can't play. It just seems like he's impatient.
It's never questioned. It's never brought up. No one ever articulates that idea. So we're left to just kind of twist.
Yeah, and again, there's ways, because that's how real life is, right? Like, real life, nation goes to war, and not everybody, like, there's people that are, you know, marching in the streets against it. There are people that are rah-rah support our troops. There's people that are ambivalent in the middle. Like, you can tell that story. You can't, but it's a big boy story to tell, and you can't do it with Lincoln Logs and fucking wooden blocks.
But I don't feel like your generals would be like,
yeah, that's true.
I don't agree with this plan anymore. Even though we won every victory we planned on winning, the casualties were too high. I'm off.
Right.
I'm done.
Right.
And now I've got my own plan.
Right. Yeah.
These are not the underlings we're talking about, you know? So,
yeah,
whatever. Devil Aaron T says, the Rick and trash people segments of this last episode are so mind-numbingly stupid that I just can't fathom the reason why these writers force so much extra bullshit into the show. In what world does Rick walk up to a group that just betrayed him, armed with Polaroids that supposedly provide enough evidence that the saviors are losing? Why would you even want to work with these people ever again? The answer is the real in-world Rick wouldn't do this. Yeah, it's a bad plan. And we don't understand why he's doing it.
That's the thing.
Well, I mean, it's a bad idea to try and get these people back on your side.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, once is an accident. What's that phrase they had that was that in a James Bond? Like, once is an accident, twice a coincidence, three is an enemy action. Like, how many times does garbage people have to betray you to where you're already in this peace proposal acknowledging that they totally fucking welched on the last peace? This is like kind of the Jesus thing in macrocosm.
Sure.
It's really dumb. Soul crushing.
Okay, Michael in Durham, England. So I stumbled across your Game of Thrones podcast over 2 years ago and introduced my girlfriend to it. We both love it. He's never emailed before, but he just wanted us to know that ever since he saw Rosita turn someone into confetti, he's been laughing in pure anticipation of our reaction to that scene. I hope that we delivered the goods.
Yeah, it was,
because holy shit,
it's a for better or worse top 10 moment of Walking Dead.
It is, yeah. He goes on, I wish this whole series wasn't so dumb. I think that the story has such a good backbone. Like, a genuine all-out war versus Negan could be fantastic, but the non-plan telling is stupid. Rick has clearly got himself captured on purpose, and Daryl and company aren't going rogue. They're just doing the next step of the plan, in my opinion. Really? You think so? I think they're going rogue. Just a stupid way of trying to make us think that they've lost faith in Rick and continue morgalizing.
That's
just lying to your audience.
That's outrageous. Yeah. It turns out that this was also part of the plan, because there's a way you can say, we're sticking to the plan. We can't sulk. They're not telling that story. They're telling
the headlock part of the plan?
Yeah, right.
The headlock that destroyed all the weapons you wanted to get? Was that part of the plan?
Rick says this isn't how we're going to do it? Like, yeah, no.
No, I can't see it. Sorry, Michael. Alex A. says, the show is not bold enough to have Rick and Daryl truly at each other's throats. That was a cop-out fight. No real emotional stakes. This has been a peeve of mine since season 4 when they set up Daryl's reaction to Rick banishing Carol and then wussed out. Daryl almost punches Rick, and then the scene is interrupted by the fall of the prison and never dealt with again. I remember thinking it would have been way more interesting if they really went there with Daryl and Rick, made them have a genuine falling out before they were separated in season 4. That would raise attention when they see each other again and Daryl's on the road with the claimers who want to kill Rick and Carl.
That's the perils of not having any kind of roadmap, even though they have a very successful and award-winning comic series in which to model the show on.
Yeah. It's tough writing when you have a blueprint.
I mean, that makes the Vince Gilligan analogy even more absurd. Uh-huh. It'd be like if fucking the Double D's said that. Can you imagine the fan base if they'd be like, you know, we just kind of like want to mix it up, keep it fresh, write ourselves in the corners. Like, what the fuck? You're following a book.
Right.
What the fuck? Like, you know, I don't know. It's sad.
John O says, I thought it was hilarious when the dying savior said that short-haired psycho lady, describing Carol, and Rick and Daryl both immediately go, oh, that's Carol. Reminds me of when Gareth the Terminus called her the queen bitch who killed my mom. I love hearing Carol described by her enemies. They're right. Absolutely terrified of her.
Yeah, it's that's the thing. Like,
she's the fucking ghost. She's the Grim Reaper. Like,
she's the widow that Negan should worry about, and he doesn't even know.
Absolutely. Caroline Z, who should raise the baby? I thought Aaron was going to, but he didn't seem interested. I think it would be a nice step for his character. He seems like he'd be a loving dad. Where would you like to see Aaron's arc go from here? So who do you think should raise this baby? I think Judith should raise the baby. I think they should raise each other.
Carl should take Judith and raise her with all the nuggets of wisdom he got from.
Yeah.
Teach her how to make terrible pancakes.
Oh, Carl and Enid could raise the baby together.
Oh, my God.
Perfect.
Oh, my God. Teen mom in the zombie apocalypse.
Teen mom and teen dad.
I love everything. Well, it goes without saying teen mom always has a teen dad.
I don't know that that's true.
I didn't say teen husband or anything, but like, if it's not a teen dad, then that dad's probably in jail or should be, right?
Yeah. No,
so
probably.
Yeah, teen mom and zombie apocalypse. I don't think I can come up with a better answer than that.
Awesome.
Like, maybe again, they recast the show because they're gonna have to, and they bring in Guy Ferrari.
Yep.
See what he has to do. But honestly, they should turn over The Walking Dead to us, and we will be a shadowy supergroup. The showrunner that is collectively referred to as Guy Ferrari. Like Daft Punk.
Okay.
Who's Daft? Who's
awesome.
Punk?
Yeah.
I don't know. They're just two dudes that hang out in robot suits. No one knows who they are. They make awesome music. We don't have to make this humiliating for you. Like, I get it. Jim and Aaron hired to showrun The Walking Dead. Harshest critics flipping them the keys. That's a bad headline to read.
It is.
We will wear the robot costumes. We will
wear the silk shirts with the flames.
Yeah, we can do this. We can have the special sauce. No one has to know. It can be an under the table kind of thing.
Yeah, we need to change that org petition to get Guy Ferrari hired.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's secretly us.
Yes.
Who's Guy and who's Ferrari? I don't know. You have to tell. Only our closest fans will be able to tell.
Let's see. Christopher H. says, Ezekiel and Carol have both been acting for so long, but they can be real around each other. Do you think they are a good romantic match? And if so, why?
Who?
Ezekiel and Carol.
I thought they were a good romantic pair until this season. Because it's one thing, like, if she was truly in love with Ezekiel and, like, you know, support him through a tough time. But I think it's going to be tough for a woman like Carol to see this guy just completely lose his shit and be and sulk on this scale and be able to respect him enough to have a kind of a success. I mean, they could have some kind of weird relationship where she just browbeats him and dominates him all the time.
I mean, Carol's been there, though, right? Maybe she's got a little bit of empathy.
When has Carol ever been this craven in ever? Like, even back to season one, like, when she was getting popped by her fucking trash husband, she was not, like, exactly... I mean, she wasn't a doormat, right?
No, I think she was. I mean, I don't know. That was certainly my reading of it. I mean, I'm not blaming her for that.
I felt like once Shane beat that guy's ass, there's a scene in particular where, like, you know, her husband was trying to get her daughter in the tent alone with them for probably nefarious purposes, and yeah. She's like, no, fuck off. And, like, from that point on, I think that she resolved to be a strong character.
Sure.
And there was an evolution. Like, she wasn't quite there in season two, but, like, certainly by the end of season three, she was there. And I just feel like that person is going to see a person like Ezekiel that, like, you could have been, you know, we could have been this power couple, but you got to the point where I picked up a fucking rocket launcher and a firework, or no, not even a rocket launcher. I had a firework and an assault rifle, and I killed a camp full of cannibals, single womanly.
Yep.
You know, like, you got to that part and you shit the bed, Ezekiel. You didn't pick up the firework. You're sulking in here and holding the sad-ass chain. They used to hold a badass tiger, and it's not a good look. And I don't think you can turn that around in a romantic relationship.
I'd also just be worried about, like, are you being real here? Like, you're really into this, right? Because, like, that whole fake it till you make it thing that we talked about before, that doesn't apply to us, right?
Yeah, true.
No? Okay, good. You? No? Okay, all right. I just, every day they have that conversation. They wake up. They look at themselves, they roll over in bed, and they say, faking it?
Did you watch The Talking Dead?
No.
I watched like 15 minutes of it because I was eating lunch here at the office, and I'm like, okay, I can't take my notes yet because I need both hands for that. So I'll watch a little bit of The Talking Dead. Melissa McBride looks really, really beat down and, like, very, very hard for her to engage with Chris Hardwick's. Like, he wants to delve into her relationship with this. Now, did you know that the kid that plays Henry is the younger brother of the person who played Sophia?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
And what's amazing is I got none. Like Chris is trying to play that up. Like, oh, that's something showrunners did to, like, give you a connection. And, like, it's supposed to be a constant reminder of blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, Wow.
Grasping straws.
Yeah, like that chemistry should all be there, but, like, I'm not really getting it. I don't think it's her fault. She's still heroic for trying to do what she's doing on this damn show, but she sure looked tired and kind of beat down on the show last night.
Yeah. All right, Nola B.
It's not your fault, Melissa. You're pretty awesome.
Final email. Says, I'm getting tired of The Walking Dead recycling the same storyline with Carol and children. We've seen Carol love and lose Sophia, Lizzie and Mika, and Sam. I don't need her to be mean to this kid, and then he melts her cold heart. I've literally seen that exact story with Jesse's son. Do you think there's something poetic about Carol reliving her loss as a mom again and again through other children, or are they just pigeonholing her with the same plot for no reason?
It feels a little pigeonholy. I think it would be kind of cool for her. Like, I wish that her and Enid had gotten, like, a bond, because that... She's not mourning a son that she lost. She's mourning a daughter. So, like, Enid is kind of like that wild child, strong, independent personality that, like, Carol, like, that's like Carol's perfect daughter. Why have they kept them apart so much on the screen? Like, I like Enid and Carl as much as the next person, but why Enid would bond with Maggie over, like, Carol? Now, I understand that Carol wouldn't go looking for or want it, but like that's, I guess that's the child pairing if you're going to force one on Carol that would be interesting, like, and productive, like, you know,
yeah,
like Carol's got it, like would Carol like care and love for this child who is such a headstrong, risky person in a zombie apocalypse? Like it's kind of like, you know, embracing your worst qualities.
I mean, they'd have to let her pair up with a kid who isn't going to die within six episodes.
Yeah.
In order for anything like that to happen.
Yeah, and that's another reason why. Like, Enid at the Hilltop sucked. It broke her and Carl up. Like, Enid's not going to fucking wet nurse or dry nurse or whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, that's, I think I just implied that she'd be breastfeeding Maggie's daughter. She's not going to fucking do any of that shit.
She's definitely not going to do that.
No, I mean, and also, it's like, is that healing? Like, are they trying to say that, like, because she is trying to do that, it's, like, healthier than, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I like this single child who is part of a group but not part of a group and kind of, like, semi-feral. And I really like that, and they've destroyed that version of Enid. Maybe we'll get her back that she's mounting up for the all-out war campaign.
Maybe. I feel like she needs another Glenn in her life. Glenn was a pretty good influence.
I think that's what it was. Maybe they had the thing with her and Glenn, and they tried to transition it to her and Maggie, and it just didn't quite work.
I don't know. I mean, it's not working for me. I don't think it's bad. It doesn't do much for
me. It's not as good as a fan fiction I just wrote about Carol and Enid.
That's true.
Trying to raise a rebellious teenage daughter in a zombie apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's it.
That's all I got. If you'd like to send us feedback, as always, watchingdead@baldmove.com. You can also follow Bald Move on all the social medias. Just search for Bald Move in the search bar. If we don't come up, it's because we're not on it. And you can always search. You can always just go to baldmove.com straight to the source and hang out at our forums, forums.baldmove.com, if you'd like to mourn The Walking Dead with us each week as we post an article and go through the motions of covering the show. We'll be back this weekend.
Melissa McBride on the show.
Melissa McBride.
This week. Aaron's sitting out. Melissa McBride has taken his place.
It's very ambivalent about what she's doing and what she's a part of and what she has wrought.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back next week. And we'll have a live watch and all the rest. Podcast on Tuesday, like we always do. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.